Wednesday morning, 3 a.m. Written by C.J. Marlowe, read by Greedy Dancer. The postcard was redirected twice before it reached Russell, the current occupant of his little 14th floor flat helpfully correcting his address and miscorrecting his surname and putting a fresh stamp on it before Royal Mail took over, ushering it from his last flat share to his newest address. Foreign city skyline, lit up with sparks in the sky, without a recognizable landmark to distinguish it from any other. He might just have tossed it onto the table and forgotten about it till after his phone call, or possibly forever, if he hadn't flipped it over idly as he stood there and stuttered over the name at the back. "Sorry, Jamie, what was that?" he said, flipping it back to the front again. It wasn't that the postcard was his first reminder that Glenn existed, that he never thought about him. Not all the time. But sometimes. He went to see an Oscar Fischinger exhibit at the Tate once that made him think of Glenn, even though it had nothing to do with him, because all art made him think of Glenn, if only in passing. "I don't think you should let Lois date till she's 30, so I might not be the best person to ask." But even a generic invitation to a gallery opening that likely went to everyone whose address had ever been written down on a scrap of paper or doorframe or iPhone wasn't something he ever actually expected. Glenn existed inside a very precise bubble in his memory, with nothing before or after. Now there was an after. "Birthday parties don't count at her age, even if it is a boy," he said, tossing the postcard back on the table and wandering into the other room to find something to fix for dinner. "Unless he's picking her up." "Is he picking her up?" The perennially bare cupboards didn't yield anything appealing, so he plucked a takeaway menu from the door, whichever one was on top, and wondered if Paul was free tonight, would want to go out after. Russell thought he remembered that he was getting back this afternoon. Maybe he should ring him. "I think you can trust her, Jamie," he said. "You raised a smart kid. Tell her Uncle Russell says hello, and I'll be up to visit as soon as I have a chance." The postcard advertising Glenn's show sat on the end table for a week before Russell picked it up again. By that time, Paul had broken up with him. Not something that left him particularly brokenhearted, since it had been mostly a relationship of convenience for both of them, and his plan to go to Tony's pre-bachelor party the night of the opening had fallen through. Tony had been Paul's friend first. He didn't want to deal with the inevitable awkwardness. In the back of his mind, he almost but not quite admitted that he'd always been planning to go see Glenn instead anyway. As he dressed well for him, because an art opening seemed like the sort of thing where artists could dress as eccentrically as they wanted, and everyone else had to dress like they had money, he struggled to identify the combination of feelings he'd been nurturing. Maybe fondness, nostalgia, a little bit of regret, curiosity. Anticipation. He wouldn't overthink it, except he also had the feeling that Glenn was going to ask. He arrived in a taxicab, and no one asked to see his invitation as he stepped inside the gallery. Russell had found a tie in the back of his closet that he usually reserved for important meetings and made sure his trousers were pressed. Glenn was in jeans and a ripped t-shirt. Which was fortunate, because it was the only way Russell was able to pick him out of the crowd. It wasn't that he looked so different from a few years ago, but faces faded and the fine details got lost. He used process of elimination. Everyone who didn't look like a tool, then of all those, all the men, then of those he started to remember smile and posture, and as soon as he heard Glenn's laugh from halfway across the room, he knew. He caught Glenn's eyes and wished he had a glass to raise, because that seemed like the kind of gesture that would be appropriate to the situation. But watch Glenn's eyes linger on him for only a moment before he turned to the man next to him, in a suit and easy 10 times as expensive as Russell's, and started talking to him animatedly about art or race cars or sex. Russell had no idea and was too far away to hear. It was maybe 20 minutes after that, when Russell had circled half the room and examined the mixed media pieces for much longer than he needed to, when he felt a whoosh of breath on his shoulder and turned his head to see Glenn there, grinning at him. For a fleeting moment, Russell thought about pretending he didn't know who it was, but then he just smiled back. "You twat," said Glenn. You were supposed to come over and save me from Prince Boring. Oh, really? Said Russell. Sorry, that signal got mistranslated as I have no idea who you are. As if, said Glenn, and for a moment it was like it had been 6 minutes since they'd last seen each other, not 6 years. It should have been more awkward than this. Long silences and struggling for words, and looking at one another for all the little changes before they fumbled for a safe topic of conversation. Instead, Glenn draped himself over his shoulders, and Russell led him, and that probably told each of them what he needed to know, more than halting conversation ever would have. It's nice, said Russell, gesturing at a painting in front of him. Photograph. Collage, he thinks it's supposed to be called. He doesn't have the language down, but he understands what he's looking at. It's nice, Glenn echoed him, then wrapped a hand around his forearm, leaving a smudge of something from under his fingernail on Russell's clean shirt, and pulled him away from the crowd, despite someone in a sleek red dress trying to catch his attention. That's better. Better for what? Said Russell. Not better for your career. Don't be so thick, said Glenn. I haven't seen you in ages. You're far more interesting. Ah, the novelty, said Russell. I'd almost forgotten. It's not like that, said Glenn, but they weren't arguing about it. Certainly not yet. What do you even do with yourself now? This and that, said Russell, fingering his glass of wine. How long are you here for? Just for this, said Glenn. I've got a thing in Paris in the morning. In Paris? I'm kind of a big deal now. He said it with a wry smile that said he knew he wasn't that big of a deal, but was also genuinely pleased that he was big enough. Just enough. In Paris, morning starts at lunchtime. Good, because you know how much I hate to get up at ass o'clock to catch a flight. No, I don't, said Russell. I didn't. Well, now you do, said Glenn. Are you here with someone? Do you have a boyfriend I pulled you rudely away from? No, I don't have a boyfriend, he said, almost under his breath, and thought about giving the long answer instead of the short answer, but didn't. And I couldn't find anyone who'd want to come with me to something like this. Asshole, said Glenn fondly. Then, you came. Well, I got invited, didn't I? Did you? I knew you didn't actually send it, said Russell. I knew it. I knew you wouldn't do something like that. I probably put you on some mailing list and forgot about it. Yeah, that sounds like something you would do. And you came. I came, said Russell. I did come. Here I am. And looking very dashing, no less, he said, reaching to straighten Russell's collar, fix his tie. Russell looked back over his shoulder at the mingling crowd. Don't do that. Don't look to see if anyone's watching. I'm not, said Russell, looking back at Glenn again. It's not that. Might be a little worried you have a big American boyfriend who's going to come punch me in the nose if you keep that up, though. Me? Said Glenn and laughed in his face. No corn-fed farm boys for me. Well, not for more than a night or two, anyway. Russell wondered if that really did mean no one, but he didn't ask. Maybe if they were somewhere else, or maybe if they had more time. It didn't matter anyway. This is weird, he said, and looked at his feet for a moment so he wasn't looking at Glenn's eyes when he said it. It's weird being here with you. I thought you meant my show was weird, said Glenn. And I was going to tell you to go to hell because you never had a problem looking at me displaying myself before. It's not the same thing, said Russell. And that wasn't what he meant anyway. But maybe to Glenn they were the same thing. And all art was existence, and all existence was art. I should let you do your job after. You're supposed to be talking to all the nice people who want to buy your art. They'll pay more money if they think I'm an asshole, said Glenn. That's not true. Sometimes it's true, said Glenn. But Russell had been paying at least a little bit of attention, and Glenn had talked to at least half a dozen people who were pretty clearly not his mates before he'd homed in on Russell. I don't mind if they don't buy it. Now that's true, said Russell. Let me guess, you only want to sell enough to be able to make more art? I'm not a fucking artiste, said Glenn. I like enough for a little bit of recreation, too. I don't starve myself for my art. Not of some things, anyway, said Russell. I can't picture you as an ascetic. I don't even know what that means. Liar, said Russell, and of all the feelings he'd been thorting through earlier, fondness seemed to be winning, though he'd added a touch of exasperation to the mix. Are we going to play this game all night? I'm quite good at it. You shouldn't be, said Glenn. You don't fucking know me that well. Maybe, maybe not, said Russell. Maybe I used to. Maybe you knew some things, said Glenn. You didn't have time to learn the rest. No, we didn't, said Russell, getting quieter. But I knew things. And he lifted his hand like he was going to put it over Glenn's mouth before he could protest. You look good. I know, said Glenn, and smirked at him, and let that be a convenient end to it. He threaded his arms through Russell's, and together they wandered back towards the bulk of the show. When they stopped, he turned to face the wall, to face his art, looking at it like it was new. After a moment, Russell turned to look at it again too, humming, like he was thinking about what to say about it. He almost reached up to stroke his chin, just for the effect, before Glenn spoke. It's about the anonymity of space. It's about loneliness. It's not... Stop it, said Russell. It is. You know it is. I can see it in every single picture. No, you can't. Your other show, your show with the recordings, did you ever do that? I did, said Glenn. That was a long fucking time ago. That was about talking about it. It was about getting in people's faces and making a statement. A really filthy statement. This is about silence. You don't know what you're talking about. Come on, have some more wine, it's free. No, it is, said Russell, though he did take another glass of wine, leaving his empty glass on the tray awkwardly. He wasn't exactly sure that was actually the correct method in this particular social situation. He'd only seen it in films. It's all right that you don't know that, though. It makes this statement more powerful. What the fuck do you know about art? What the fuck do I know about art? Said Russell. I know a lot about art, I'll have you know. Since when? Since it'd been a long time since the last time you saw me. I've done things. I've seen things. Not this, said Glenn. This was never your thing. Sports, maybe. Pretentious novelists. Bands I've never heard of. We never talked about music. Really? Said Glenn. I must be thinking of someone else I fucked once. We should have talked about music. Music tells you a lot about a person. Everything tells you a lot about a person. And if it doesn't, you'll read something into it anyway. Do you still work at that pool? No, said Russell. No, I haven't done that in a long time. Are you writing? You better be writing. Or go-go dancing. I'm not go-go dancing, said Russell, looking down and smiling at the floor. Well, not professionally. You are writing, said Glenn, taking him by the elbow and leading him a few steps away again. Eyes followed them, but not bodies. Not like I used to. Not that kind of stuff. A few things here and there. Nothing dirty, you mean? Nothing personal, said Russell. Corporate stuff, the stuff they have to pay someone to want to do. A few newspaper pieces. Boring, said Glenn. You can do better than that. You used to crack your way inside people's heads. Are you giving me career advice? I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, said Glenn, and ran a hand through his hair and looked down. He was wearing trainers, with a hole forming near one big toe. He could obviously afford better. He was obviously doing pretty well for himself. Do what you want. It's not that easy. Yes, it fucking is, said Glenn. You find what you want, and then you do it. Sometimes there are more than one thing you want, said Russell. And you have to pick one, and hope that the chance might come around again to pick the other two. Glenn was silent for a moment. They both were, silent and still and waiting, putting his fingers to his lips like he wished for his cigarette. Russell wondered if he'd quit. So you picked something else then? he said finally, choosing the road more traveled, the easy path. You picked money? I picked a chance to try something new, said Russell. Do I look like I have money? I don't have money. I get by. Are you happy? I get by, said Russell, and looked around, still waiting for Glenn to be stolen, for the clock to run out. He'd thought he might get a moment, a friendly reunion. He'd thought that Glenn would be pulled in more directions. And he wasn't wrong. He didn't think he was wrong. It was just that Glenn always did ignore the pulls and make up his own rules. You get by, said Glenn, scoffed. Maybe I shouldn't have come. He expected Glenn to say something quick and sharp, but he was silent, and that in itself was a sudden reminder of where they were, not physically, but in their lives. Some things you could pick up where you left them, and others you had to start from scratch. I don't mean that. Yeah, I know, said Glenn, and gave him a sly smile. We should get out of here. You can't, said Russell. You're working. My agent can take it from here, said Glenn. Come on, I've got a ridiculously extravagant hotel room. Are you being serious right now? I should probably worry more about what it cost, but my agent made all the arrangements. No, I mean about inviting me back to your hotel room. Don't be a twat, said Glenn. Of course I'm serious. Who else am I going to ask back? I don't know, said Russell. Anyone you liked? Exactly, said Glenn. Do you really want me to change my mind? For a moment, Russell wasn't sure. The one thing that should have been easy and familiar was suddenly some kind of moral quandary. No, not moral, but something more than just taking someone home. I just broke up with someone. Even better, said Glenn. You can tell me all about it. And then it was okay. Glenn grinned at him, and Russell grinned back, and moments later they were hailing a cab back to Glenn's hotel room. And Russell didn't overthink it, even though he knew that they only had a few hours before Glenn had to leave again, that they were maybe the only few hours they were ever going to have. He wasn't going to waste any of them, and he wasn't going to worry about it. They had to try 3 times before they got the kiss right, which meant that Russell wasn't the only one who felt like this was more than a hookup, more than all time's sake. Because if there was one thing they never had trouble with, it was touching. It was sex. Glenn's body wasn't quite what he remembered. It was harder in different places, sculpted here and there, the body of someone who was aware of what he looked like, but not that concerned about it. Just concerned enough, like everything he did. Just enough. Everything extra went into art. Hurry up, hurry up, he said. What, are you an old man now? What do you think? Said Russell and kissed his shoulder, the front of his shoulder on an awkward plane. I think I've got to go in a couple of hours, said Glenn, and I'll never forgive you if we don't get past second base. I don't even know what second base is, said Russell. Is that here? And he kissed Glenn's nipple. Or here? And he grazed his teeth over the side of his ribs. Or somewhere further down. And he shifted himself down the bed a few inches, just enough to press his lips to Glenn's stomach. You're getting warmer, said Glenn. Warmer, warmer. If second base is giving you a blowjob, then what's a home run? You'll find out if you're bendy enough, said Glenn. Now get on with it. Russell laughed and pulled Glenn's trousers off, tossing them onto the sterile armchair. He traced the muscles in his calves and thighs until Glenn kicked at him and told him to get on with it again, and Russell settled in comfortable to suck him off. A handjob would actually have been more intimate, would have put them face to face and kissing and talking, but Russell wanted this. He wanted it like this. His senses would remember this for longer. He'd always been a swallower, and Glenn knew that because somehow, after years apart, he still remembered that one weekend with Russell. Somehow, after years apart, Russell still remembered that one weekend, too. So Glenn held him there, fingers threaded through his hair and cradling the back of his head, and he held Russell there as he came, and while Russell swallowed him down. God, you're a champion, he said with a satisfied sigh, and Russell tried not to laugh as he pulled away and licked his lips. "Will you let me fuck you now? Wait, no, no, I don't want to."
"You don't want to?"
"Not that. I don't want to wait. I could..."
"Let me,"
he said, and with the hand that was still cradling Russell's head, almost tenderly, he pulled him back up the bed. Then he kissed him for a long time, long enough that Russell began to rock forward, and figured that if he was going to rot against Glenn's body to get off, that was okay, because this felt good enough. It was enough.
"Are you good?"
"Yes," said Russell, but it wasn't until Glenn wrapped a hand around his cock and kissed him while he jerked him off that he realized, yes, yes, the answer really was yes, so much yes. It wasn't over quickly, and even when it was over and wasn't over, they still lay together on the bed. Russell told him about Portland, and Glenn told him about Jamie and Lois, and then about Evan and about John before him. And Russell told him about Duke, who was like a shooting star, magnificent and gone too soon. And 6 years really was a long time, but not that long. Not too long.
"I've got this thing."
"Yes, I know." "Right, I've got this thing," said Glenn, putting a hand over Russell's mouth so that he couldn't interrupt this time. "I've got this thing, but then I'm coming back."
"Coming back where?"
"Here," said Glenn. "London, anyway. Not this hotel. Close enough."
"To stay?"
"As much as I stay anywhere," said Glenn. "I'm over Portland. I'm over Los Angeles."
"And New York?"
"No one's ever over New York," said Glenn. "They just say they are. But what's an ocean anyway? We've got airplanes now. It's a brave new world."
"Now who's quoting pretentious novelists?"
"Shakespeare wasn't pretentious," said Glenn. "So I've got this thing in Paris, and then I'll be back here."
"I don't know what that means," said Russell.
"I don't know what you're saying."
"I'm saying you should invite me to your flat after," said Glenn.
"And you should give me your new mobile number now."
"And then?"
"I don't know," said Glenn. "Do we have to know? Why do we have to know?"
"We don't have to know," said Russell, and smiled at him, and leaned over his body so he could program his number into Glenn's phone.
The end.
Reader's notes. I hope you enjoyed this podfic. If you would like to tell C.J. Marlowe, the writer of the story, how much you enjoyed it, you can find it at archivaon.org/works/600073. And I've been Greedy Dancer, and you can find this podfic, as well as others, at Archive of Our Own, Live Journal, and Dreamwidth. Thank you for listening.